Yeah, I worked on liquefied colonial botany. So for Divergence, before the first exhibition, I was asked to look into the databases of Wikidata, and linked to it is Wikipedia. Wikidata is a structured version of Wikipedia where people extract formatted information, so relational information, let's say, that can be filled into fields of a database. And my idea was to look at the representation of trees and how they are, as a more than human being or other than human being, how they are represented in these databases. Mm-hmm. And the interest came from traveling through Asia, Southeast Asia, where there's a lot of colonial botanical gardens. And so it's very, it's all places that are protected by UNESCO. And it's very striking in what good shape they are and what kind of history they tell. So I was especially interested in looking at this colonial heritage with a critical eye. Anyway, I started looking for trees, and it's not so easy in Wikidata, but I'll come back to that later. So in the end, for the first version of Divergence, I chose to pick a series of trees, four trees, that were very specific, or that have a specific her story in colonial times. Because they were either discovered, because they became really commercial goods that could be cut and traded and imported and exported, and still until today. And I decided that I would represent these trees with the text in Wikipedia in four former colonial languages, and see how the narration about these specific trees was different when it came to French, Spanish, Dutch, or English. And so that's the that's the first work. So it was a tableau format where I used the images of the database of the royal, it's not royal anymore, of the garden, botanical garden in Meissen. Mm-hmm. And the botanical garden in Meissen, which is a place next to Brussels, has a very strong link to the colonial history of Belgium. And they have an amazingly big collection of herbarium. So during the colonial period, they sent off people to collect plants and bring them back, and they have these sheets with stick plants that are stuck onto them. Sorry, I could have prepared this better.
It's fine. It's
gonna, because you can just see it in the database, actually. So there's collections, and then you see our herbarium collections.
Mm-hmm.
Virtual herbarium. And mm-hmm. here we are. So I don't know, I can click maybe one that has been. There's no image for that one. Sorry, the one that has an image, that's nicer. Because, that's it. It's high scans with all the details of the different different stickers, different writings, different periods that were. That these herbarium sheets lived on, because of course they are also. That was a bad choice. Sorry. and so you go on. So here we have the Coronilla Famigliana, and then you can see the picture here, and you can even only make it bigger also, or you can move inside the picture. That's it. And so you see all these details on how people have classified it, but also how they moved from one collection to another, which is actually quite stunning that they have done this. You can also see where it comes from, and you get a date from when it was collected. So here it's collected by and a person, Gérard P, in 1956 in the Democratic Republic of Congo in a locality called Madabou, Zobia. And so I found it interesting to connect these pictures to the content of Wikipedia, because in the content of Wikipedia you have content in the four languages that is the same, but the content differs a lot depending on which language you're reading. You have, for example, in English, there's a lot more scientific language that is used on DNA analysis, or what this plant is used for in industry, that kind of things. While, for example, in Spanish, you have a lot more stories on, how these trees were discovered, what kind of strange colonial disformations and formations were happening before these trees were discovered, or how knowledge was extracted from indigenous people. So that was the idea, to a bit show how these trees live today in especially Wikipedia, that is very much used to train algorithmic other softwares, let's say, or algorithmic models. Because Wikipedia has so many, has so many languages, is updated every day, and the information is accurate. But actually, when you then look at how the different languages are treated in Wikipedia, it is, of course, I mean, we all know it, but then you see it, that it's very disproportionate. And if you want to train a linguistic model for Dutch, then Wikipedia, I don't know. so there is still a neo-colonial aspect to it today, that you see that, for example, English spoken and even Spanish spoken is much more present than the current minority language.
Sorry, I didn't hear what the last thing you said.
What was the last thing I said? You see the a kind of you can do a neo-colonial reading of Wikipedia, where you see that English and Spanish languages, and maybe, I mean, I didn't look into other languages, but that these are more represented than minority languages. And so if you want to, you can see a tendency towards software development that is much more in English than in Dutch, for example. But I think the kind of the attempt to be objective in English and this very rigid structure to write Wikipedia articles, I have the impression in Spanish it's a lot more loose.
Okay.
And you have an idea why that is the case?
Oh, no, it would be interesting, eh? No.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, well, intuitively, I think it has to do with cultural identities. that it's warmer in the on the Spanish pages. I don't know how to say this. It sounds strange, but it's more accessible, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
More human, maybe.
We were speaking to Zelko, of course, about his project, Different Versions Are Possible.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the history of Wikipedia and the fact that the first people that were editing and having the privilege of making lots of contributions were mainly, at that time, middle-aged white males,
mm-hmm.
with a certain view on the world, and that this has come to dominate the kinds of editorial guidelines and modes that are still present in Wikipedia,
yeah.
which might be different in a language, like in a language that comes second somehow.
Yeah.
So it has the chance to reinvent itself and also
mm-hmm.
find other people.
I will have to look into that, how that works for Spanish, but
it will be interesting to look at,
because it's true that we know for the English Wikipedia that it's mainly indeed middle class male, middle aged man, white man, often single also, I heard. I read somewhere.
That's strange. How is that information available that they're single? There's not. I mean, when you fill in your information on Wikipedia as an author, you don't have to.
No. Yeah. It's Romain from Wikimedia Belgium who told me this.
Okay. So maybe they surveyed the editors or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
The network of editors, and they also do yearly meetings and stuff like that. So.
All right.
Do you want to talk a bit about the current version you were working on?
Yeah. So the biggest, for me, the most important question that came from this work during the exhibition was, why did you not look at other languages? It could be Chinese, but could also be a minority language of India, or Quechua in Latin America, like an indigenous language. And why did you not look at other species of trees that have less famous histories in colonialism? And I found that interesting because, of course, there is so much more available. The other starting point for me was that I had tried to look at what a tree was in Wikidata. I bumped into another colonial infrastructure, which is the classification by Carl Linnaeus.
Mm-hmm.
So Linnaeus was a Swedish guy who lived in the 18th century. He was a botanist. He had a colonial vision, but a particular one. He wanted, instead of Sweden being able to conquer the world, because he realized that Sweden was a small country and it would be difficult to compete. He wanted to bring all the species, all the plant and tree species of the world back to Sweden, and have there the kind of universal garden. So he sent out a lot of his students to go and look for plants, and what he is known for is his classification technique. When you go and look on Wikidata for tree, you need to go and find the Q code. So each element on Wikidata has a code, and then with that code, that was my phone. I put it on silent. I forgot. So with that code, you go into. You can do a query on Wikipedia, actually, on Wikidata. Sorry, and for the query, you go into this kind of box. It's a service that they offer online. you can also write scripts, but this is like a quick one. And then you have this specific query code or query language, where you give a property. In this case, it's an instance of, and it's property 31. And you give a Q code, which in this case, why does it have? It should show us. Yeah, is a tree, a perennial woody plant. And then you go and look for these items. So when you see at the list of trees that come out of it, it's telling because it's really Wikidata as a result is very much focused on individuals. Huh? So if you would do a query on human, I mean, it takes too long. I tried it, but there's so many entries for human that, it really takes very long. But you get all the film stars, you get all the actors, you get all the famous all the presidents, all the kings, all the queens. And so for trees, you have a similar result. You get all the individual trees that mm-hmm. are famous, like the Anne Frank tree is a horse chestnut tree in the city center of Amsterdam. That was featured in her diary. And then you get a picture, but you also get all the links to all the Wikipedia pages about this tree. So if you go to the English one, for example, then you see a description of the tree. So that's how it works. But of course, for me, this was a very unsatisfying result that only, let's say, a selection of famous trees was present, and that I could not get a picture of all the trees that were present in Wikidata, mm-hmm. like oaks and beeches and all the different species. And that has to do with the classification of Carl von Linnaeus, because for him. So he organized actually the whole botanical science around the reproduction and mm-hmm. not around, is it a plant, a flower, a tree, with the idea that depending, so it comes from this Swedish context and his desire for a universal garden, that depending on the climate, a plant can grow into a tree or can stay a plant. And so I found it an interesting idea that any child, any person today can say this is a tree and this is not, this is a bush. Mm-hmm. But that when you look at the database, it's impossible to find this information.
Because Wikidata follows Linnaeus' taxonomy. Classification. Yeah.
And so then I thought, okay, I look for a list of trees, what are possible trees, and I take it from there. Like when you look at the Wikidata, you go for Quercus robur, for example, which is the Latin name for an oak, summer oak. Mm-hmm. You get a code. So there is a page on this species mm-hmm. with all the different categories present, with pictures and then with the individual trees also. And then again, the different languages and all the entries from other databases where it comes from. So it's there. It's there. The only thing it's very difficult to retrieve it because it's a very silly thing. But it's a subclass. Quercus robur is a subclass of Quercus. I mean, now it gets a bit technical. I don't know if it's interesting for you. And then Quercus is an instance of taxon. But if you look at taxon is. Is at the root of the database. There is taxon is a group of one or more organisms which which a taxonomist adjudges to be a unit. So it's a total loop. And that was where I thought, okay, how to circumvent this? So I looked at this list of three genera. So genera is the under the genera you have the different species. So genera is like a family, a taxonomic family, and then you get the different species. And so on Wikipedia there is this list of three genera, the major three genera. So it's a list of what are possible trees. And so I scraped this list of families with the different species and with their Q codes in Wikidata, and that gives something like this. So you have Abies, fir with the Q code, and then acacia, you have the maple, you have the baobab, you have the horse chestnut. And in the end I found through that technique 143 families of trees. And then with that information I could go back to Wikidata and look at what kind of information was present for these specific tree families, and I used a tool for which I haven't found yet who has made this. I hope for the exhibition to find out, but it's called Wikidata Taxonomy, and it uses Bash and Node.js to create for an entry. So you give it a code, and then it creates actually this database structure with parents and children. And so what was interesting then is that I could, for example, extract a page like this. So Durio, for those who have never traveled to Southeast Asia, I think the durian is not very known, but durian is, when you're in Singapore, for example, or in Malaysia, and you're in a hostel, there will be everywhere these kind of posters saying no durian, prohibited durian. And I didn't understand why until I had I went into a shop where they were selling durians, and I tried one, and it has a very, very strong smell. And it's a very specific smell, and it's really very, very powerful. So you see the Latin names of all the different species of the family Durium, and you see behind it a number, which is the type, the amount of instances on English Wikipedia for this species. To go back to now, it was easy to go back to a different language because I could just extract all the different possible languages in Wikidata.
Meaning, like the Q code, which is an ID for the subspecies, but it's not like language, like it's not.
The Q code is the Q code is for the different species, but you can specify the language. So I did a query on all different languages that are present in Wikidata, which are 95 different languages, I think. If I'm not, I don't know if that's interesting to show you the file of the languages.
No, it's okay.
No, that's okay. And so that was what was funny then, is that I could go and look at the same page in Malay, for example.
The names, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so here you get all the different names of the families that you saw before in a spreadsheet. And then for each of the families, you get the different species in Latin. And then when you click on a species, you get the information available in the different languages. This is really work in process. It's not finished at all. And we're still looking for, but you see now, for example, in Asturian there is data, in Bulgarian there is data, in Cebuano there is data, in Dutch, English, French, German, I mean, there is no secret. And then, yeah, Italian. And then you see also all the different languages that are promises somehow from Wikidata, where the structure is there, but there's no information available. And so this is what I'm working on for the second version, is how to make this somehow accessible. A visualization that's interesting for this type of information.
So it's somehow mapping because it has to do, of course, also when you start talking about the durian, like the locality of the trees or the relation of the trees to a locality, and then their presence or non-presence in a project that promises. To have space for everything.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
In any language thinkable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the moment to ask you the question that came from Christina.
Okay, nice.
Because she was wondering about the nice confusion between a data tree and a tree as an organism. And the ways your research into Wikipedia at the one hand had sort of made your thinking with data trees and hierarchies different.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're working with organic trees had maybe produced some fantasies or some imaginations of other ways of organizing data. So it's like how the two ways of thinking with trees had somehow interfered with each other. Nice question, no?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I mean, if we chose in as a first visualization for this this model, then it is because it is the data tree, of course, that you see here.
You mean like from left to right? You zoom in a way.
Yeah, you zoom in, and you the structure we use is a tree structure, and the thing with trees, data trees structures is that they go in the opposite direction than a tree really, because it grows more and more specific. I don't know if that's clear what I'm saying. Anyway.
What do you mean? Like a data structure grows more and more specific?
Well, if you would draw a data structure of a tree, then the basis is the basis is the top. How do you say? You start with the basis at the top, and then you go into different branches and more branches, and so your crown is upside down. Do you understand what I say?
I think so. Yeah.
So the tree is upside down, which has always struck me, like how strange. And I have been looking into where does it come from, because it's actually a tree that is upside down. It's growing like as a rhizome, not as a tree. But I don't have more information on it now. I think I'm not prepared for it. But that has always shocked me somehow, that they call it a tree structure and it's actually something else. And I think that to take organic trees as a subject for queries in these data structures puts everything upside down. I mean, the fact that you don't have a concept of tree, for example, mm-hmm. The fact that the descriptions of the, I don't know, there's, for example, there you cannot, it's very rare to find a description of an ecology of a tree. The tree is a being that goes into symbiosis with many other plants, mosses, lichen, but also insects, animals, birds, and it's such a rich creature, and it's so bare. The descriptions are so bare. So there's a lot of things to say about once you go from the organic tree to the data represented tree. But yeah, I don't know.
No, I mean, I think also when you start to talk, explaining the project and your frustration with the...
sorry.
When you started talking about your frustration with the fact that trees were represented not just not as a group, but also when they are represented, they are represented as individuals, which is something that, like, this kind of assumption of discretion, of the ability to cut things up into individual units,
independent
yeah. indeed, is somehow really has lots of implications for the way data works in the world, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Maybe I can ask a last question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see the genealogy of botanical classification and technology for machine learning intersect or taking different paths?
Oh, can you repeat that question, please?
Sure. How do you see the genealogy of botanical classification
yeah.
and technologies for machine learning intersecting or taking different paths?
It's difficult to talk about technologies for machine learning because mm-hmm. it's such a wide field. And every machine learning project is a very specific project always. It has specific objectives and specific tasks to do for which specific data is necessary. So, it's difficult to talk about the more generic way of technologies, how technologies work. But for what I have witnessed in different machine learning projects, specifically for language, I mean, that's what I'm looking at, is that there's always a contextualized choice. So people use what they... imagine you have to develop a machine learning software for a specific to solve a specific problem, let's say recognize a tree with a picture, and then you have to recognize the tree. You need specific data to train your model on. And if that specific data is not available, people take proxy data. So Wikipedia and Wikidata is very much used as proxy data for a first training of the software. So why? Because the API is available to download Wikidata and to download entire English Wikipedia, for example. So you can work with all that data in, let's say, in an hour, because it takes maybe, I don't know, half an hour or an hour to download. And then you have this data available, which means that there is very much an attitude of this is the data we can use, this is the data that's accessible and that's available, and this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to use, without maybe looking too closely into how is this data structured or what is represented inside this data. And we had the same, we fell into the same trap with the Mundaneum. So, that's often due to time limits that you need to speed up and you don't have the right data, but you have a proxy data and it gives something or it's a start and then from there you can go on. So that I find, Maybe my answer to your question would be, I think they intersect far too much. And it would be interesting to see how they could take a different path.
I mean, it's a complicated task, of course, but I see your project as somehow preparing the ground for possibly rethinking the way trees can be found in data structures.
That would be great, yeah. Still a long way to go, I think. Because that's what the local, like the webs, the index of the website is showing now. I'm struggling with it, but there's still 2 weeks to go, so I hope I can.
Wanted to confirm that I think that it's that the, I mean, it's not to say to glorify the struggle. that I think the work is about trying to, prepare the ground, like by digging into these systems. And that means that you sometimes fall into pre-made grooves, but it is about trying to see where these different structures could maybe change each other, or transform each other.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I think there's when we were preparing the conversation with you, we were thinking about was this the way that these taxonomy systems that are so much based on the desire and desire to an assumption that it's possible of putting things in their place. That very much continues in projects like Wikipedia. But in order to critique it, but also to kind of start to think differently with it, some digging needs to be done.
Definitely. No, and of course, I mean, it's scary to work with 17,400 files. I mean, they're now in one folder, but you cannot open the folder manually. Huh? You can only open the folder with a script because it's just too big. Yeah, it's. I mean, I say it's scary. At the same time, it's what it is. But you get used to it. But yeah, it's. I think it's 1 gigabyte of data or something.
So maybe, I mean, it's we didn't plan it this way, but it's very nice, I think, to ask you now, if you could think of a question you would want to ask the Uncertainties Project.
Yeah.
Because I think, there's obviously many connections, no?
I'll ask the question. I'm not sure if it's a relevant question, but what I find intriguing in their work is that all the descriptions they work with and for which they find the uncertainties are also related to objects, to physical objects that are exposed in a museum or can be exposed in a museum. And so my question for them would be, do you have any fantasies on how to show works, how to show this collection of uncertainties as a physical collection? How would that work? How would that display be different from what we see now in the museum, for example? Mm-hmm. Because there are objects with these descriptions and their maybes and question marks and three dots. But of course it's not the focus. So if it becomes the focus, what would that mean? Mm-hmm. Or what kind of collection would they propose? Because I can imagine that then maybe a very tiny object with a lot of question marks in the description becomes the head of the collection, you know, like the kind of the most important mm-hmm. object in the collection. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It'll be nice to talk to them about this.
Okay, nice.